Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. Glad to have you on board tonight. It's Monday, which means tomorrow in all likelihood will be Tuesday, and then we'll be rolling right in the middle of the week again. Nonstop news, action, and entertainment. And if you don't go into this alt-news world with the idea you're going to be entertained to a degree, you're missing the point. And I think upwards of at minimum 80, 85%, maybe 90% is either created opposition or controlled or both. It doesn't matter. And the rest of it seems to be populated with a lot of people who are completely obsessed with their egos. Many are making money. It's that kind of a tawdry sideshow. That's just what happens. And be aware when you walk into this, you're walking into a very muddy kind of a minefield. Let me do this real quick. Let me welcome my partner back, and then I want to do something. I'm going to do this CIA thing, this real short little clip to make a point. Welcome back, Erica.
Why, thank you. Good to
be
back.
Been? How you been? What have you been doing? Playing
very,
table
very
tennis?
Busy.
Ping pong?
No, table tennis. No.
It's crazy. You sent me a video I hadn't seen for years, and I have it up at the top of the homepage. And for those of you who have not seen it, it's a shorty, and it's very important. We used to talk about years ago on this program of how the deep state, back in the day, we always called it CIA, but it's more than that, actually controlled the media. Now, we know they control the mainstream media. That's a given. But I've been trying to harp on the theme that they also control the alt media. They control the whole paradigm. That's what they do. They'd much rather be in the position of releasing the truth, whatever truth they wish to release, than have somebody else do it. So they'll release the truth, then they'll come back and mix it up with confusion and chaos and other things. But they want utter control. And I'm here to tell you, they've got it. Now, this is interesting. Erica found this. It's Mind Control 101, she called it. And then, perfect. This is an ex-CIA agent, all right? And he talks about how X number of national journalists work with the CIA. They weren't necessarily controlled with them. They were voluntarily cooperating with them. There's a difference. Now, I would suggest that they're being placed and they are absolutely controlled. But this is 40 years ago. Now, I want you to listen to this. It's short. 2 minutes. This is an ex-CIA agent named Stockwell, and he's got the truth.
Another thing is to disseminate propaganda to influence people's minds. And this is a major function of the CIA. And unfortunately, of course, it overlaps into the gathering of information. You have contact with a journalist. You will give him true stories. You'll get information from him. You'll also give him false stories.
Did you do buy his confidence with true stories?
You buy his confidence and set him up. We've seen this happen recently with Jack Anderson, for example, who has his intelligence sources, and he has also admitted that he's been set up by them. You know, every fifth story just simply being false.
Every fifth story just simply being false. Does that engender confidence in you? And this is 40 years ago.
You also work on their human vulnerabilities to recruit them.
You also work on their human frailties and vulnerabilities to recruit them. It's no problem. Everyone's got a price, or they get hooked up with some woman, or if it's a woman, they get hooked up with a man. They get compromised. That's how they do it. They have video. Now, Jeffrey Epstein, of course, took that to its ultimate level of mass bribery and influence peddling. He did it all.
In a classic sense, to make them your agent so that you can control what they do, so you don't have to set them up sort of, you know, by putting one over on them. So you can say, here, plant this one next Tuesday.
And they did it. And the CIA, was it Mockingbird, I guess? They bragged that they could put any story in any newspaper within an hour in the U.S. and have it printed. Now it's instantaneous with the television mainstream media. They just send them the text they want read, and boom, it's done. All right, here.
Can you do this with responsible reporters?
Yes, the Church Committee brought it out in 1975, and then Woodward and Bernstein put an article in Rolling Stone a couple of years later.
So even responsible reporters, so-called, back in the day, were easily compromised. And that's how they did it.
400 journalists cooperating with the CIA, including some of the biggest names in the business, to consciously introduce the stories into the press.
Did you get that? 400 national journalists at key locations in radio, television, and newspapers were cooperating with the CIA for money, obviously, unless they were being bribed or blackmailed, to place any story the agency, now that we call it the deep state, in the mass media, and people are going to believe it. If it's on the TV or on the radio or in the press, it's usually accepted as generally being correct. Oh, how easy it was for them back in the day to control it all. I'm going to play the last 20 seconds again. This is very important.
Journalist cooperating with the CIA.
Oops, I didn't go back far enough. Here we go.
Later, 400 journalists cooperating with the CIA, including some of the biggest names in the business, to consciously introduce the stories into the press.
Okay. All right. Enough said. I think that's a point that should be constantly thought about whenever you wade into the mainstream media venue. When you look at that screen and look at the nightly news or the national nightly news, what are you getting? You're getting a carefully crafted package of mind control manipulation. That's what you're getting. The verbiage, the war on words, semantic wars are notorious now. And I just, the average person will, they don't process it because they go into that altered state as soon as they stare at that screen. And they no longer have the ability to pass judgment and evaluation on what's going into their minds. And it goes right into the subconscious mind and takes up residence in some database of memory banks. It's not hard to program the sheeple. We'll leave it at that.
That's true. I guess there's just this tendency to want to believe that... if it's coming over the airwaves, it must be true.
That's always been a problem, and it's now consummate now. It's complete. People will look at the screen and say, the government wouldn't lie to us. They wouldn't. Now, you people I'm not talking about in that sense. You get it, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. But the rank and file and many of your friends just will not question what they see on that screen.
No.
They don't. So
the programming is so deep. It's really
right.
Very difficult to overcome once people have internalized a narrative.
I don't know how to even begin to do it, frankly. How do you do it when you don't have access to the same platform?
That's true.
You don't have a chance. Not a chance. All right. Okay, we have a couple of important things to do here. Dr. Rashid Buttar died suddenly, unexpectedly. 2 days ago now, I think it was Saturday.
I think it was the 18th. So late last week.
But they withheld it. They withheld it, I think, for a day before it really broke out. Dr. Buttar, in case you don't know about him, was, we'd call him an A-lister. He was top of the line in terms of the alt news world of COVID information. He had a following. He was the one who first began to push for, among other things, urine therapy, which would help you somehow supposedly detox from this bioweapon, which gets into your body and genetically screws it up badly. So we weren't big fans of Dr. Buttar. We don't think that getting up in the morning and drinking a cup of your own private stock is a particularly good idea. So some did, and I'm still waiting for the proof, but whatever. He was a well-known individual who had an annual news event, kind of a seminar, which he'd invite the public to, and it was always a big man. If you remember seeing him, he was a big guy, 220, something like that, big. And the last time I saw him, he had lost a lot of weight, and I didn't know why until he himself explained it. So let's go ahead with this. It's a little four-screen discussion. Anything you want to add about this? The Sayer G is on there. Dr. Joel Bohmeyer, he's a chiropractor. It's an interesting group. Ty Bollinger is the third, and Dr. Buttar is the fourth. So there's your four. But Dr. Buttar is going to explain in his own words what happened to him, which is really invaluable. There are rumors running around. Tell us about the rumors. This is one main one.
Some say that he died from ivermectin. Others are saying he's been poisoned, and others are saying he died of shedding. Now, we don't know. Hopefully, I mean, this would be a really good opportunity to shed some light on why people are dying suddenly. Maybe right. His family will consent or order an autopsy. That would be very nice and share the results. Right now, it's just wild speculation. We do know that he was sick back in January. He had spent 6 days in the hospital, in the ICU. Apparently, had had a stroke at that time. And then subsequently was diagnosed with myocarditis, and I believe was probably still having some issues with clotting. He was a real, I would say, freedom fighter, truth seeker, was very outspoken from the beginning of this scamdemic, and for that he should be applauded, just you know, really revered for those efforts in the beginning of exposing this for what it is. So it's a sad day for the truther movement, for the medical freedom movement, to lose an individual of this stature and commitment. But at this point, we don't really know how he died. It's possible that perhaps he picked up the virus. The virus is still out there, whether people want to believe that or not. And for the unvaxxed, it can be very problematic. And the reason being is that the people who have been vaxxed are now walking, talking, gain-of-function bioreactors. They are able to harbor the virus, allow the virus to mutate into more virulent forms, and pretty much asymptomatically, because portions of the immune system have been turned off, so they're not going to necessarily have symptoms. But they can be very infectious to other people.
Okay. Let's loop back to Dr. Buttar himself and let him explain what happened to him. Anything else you want to add? But I think your point about ivermectin is very important. We're going to loop back to that after this little clip and show you what some people are trying to do to smear this issue around. Some very reprehensible people that I have no time for at all. Ready? I think I've got. I had to stop and get it queued up again. It won't stay. I got it now, though. Okay, you ready?
Ready.
Here we go. This is the late. Sounds strange saying that, Dr. Rashid Buttar.
He says this targeting, as you know, Sarah, and I don't think Ty, you know this, but I was actually in an ICU only a month and a half ago for 6 days. I actually started having this strange phenomena. I was on stage with General Flynn and the Reawaken America tour in September in Washington State, and I was kind of getting short of breath, and I thought it was because of the wildfires there. So I wasn't even able to properly give my presentation, so I showed more videos. But after that, I'd started developing this worsening shortness of breath. I couldn't understand what was going on. And then my legs, my feet, my ankles, my legs started swelling. And within 7-8 days, the swelling disappeared. I actually hadn't started anything. I was talking to a friend of mine about maybe I should start a diuretic. I didn't know what was going on, but it disappeared after about 7 days. And about 9 or 10 days later, I hit my normal workout schedule and everything. But 8 or 9 days later, his swelling started again. And this time it lasted for about a week and a half. And now I'm thinking maybe I started working out too soon. I don't know what the hell's going on, but it was actually getting above my knees. And then it disappeared again. My sons came to visit. They were trying to figure out what was going on. And, you know, all up till Thanksgiving Day, everything was fine. But on Thanksgiving Day, the swelling started again. I had a hard time putting my boots on. And from that point till January 18th, I went from my baseline weight. Ty, you know, I'm 210 pounds. You know, when we first met, I was a lot bigger and heavier. But I actually had one or two muscles you could actually see at that time. But I went from 210 pounds on Thanksgiving Day to 260 pounds on January 18th. The fluid on me was so significant. I've got pictures, everything from above my knees, my thighs, my pelvis, scrotal distortion up into the paraspinal muscles, into my abdomen. I had to stand up to breathe. I couldn't sleep at night. It was the worst thing. I thought I was dying. I literally did. And if I hadn't had this experience in December 12th, basically an encounter with the creator where it was actually recorded. And if you guys want to see the video, you can watch it. But I was told, I begged the creator for me to stay with him. It was that beautiful of an experience. And he said, no, you wish it was going to be that lucky. You got too much work to do. You're going back. And on January 18th, I was admitted to the hospital at 260 pounds.
With no medications or steroids or anything?
Nothing. I was 260 pounds, all fluid weight. And they started to diurese me. One of my friends, an orthopedic surgeon, set it all up with an ER that's an urgent care center and had a small little private hospital next to it. I got there. The doctor there said, look, dude, you tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it. I started on Lasix and then Bumex alternating. And in the first 6 hours from midnight till, from about 12:30 at night till 7 in the morning, they diuresed 12 and a half pounds of fluid off me. And I was breathing so much better. And then as the nurse was about to hang something else, my right eye started fluttering. And my significant other, Dr. Ashton, was with me. And she looked at me and I pointed out to the nurse. And then I kind of leaned back to close my head to see if I could reset it. And I apparently passed out at that point. And I remember at one point she was like, you know, panicking. And I'm saying, why are you so animated? Just calm down. But she said that I wasn't saying that at all. There were paramedics there. They were doing the sternal rub on me. And I'm telling them, what are you doing the sternal rub on me? You know, that's supposed to be when a person is non-reactive or non-responsive. I'm responsive. I'm talking to you guys. Nothing. Apparently, I had a mid-thalamic stroke, which was confirmed by MRI. And I had diplopia for maybe 24 hours, but I had full 100% resolution, which in the normal world is called a transient ischemic attack, a TIA. But they confirmed that I actually had a full-blown stroke, you know, mid-thalamic stroke by MRI, which is the definitive component.
That's just, for those of you new to strokes, that's very serious stuff. Erica?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anything you can add to give us an idea of what that can do to people? And he was lucky. He got past it.
Well, that's controlling his vital reflexes.
Right. Right. He could have easily gone out. Okay, let's get back to it.
Continued to put me in the ICU. I had to, you know, argue with them for about 24 hours before they continued the diuresis. But when they discharged me from the hospital 6 days later, I was 198 pounds. So I went from 260 to 198, and I continued to lose weight for another week and a half. I was down to 183 pounds. Ty, do you think I was even born at 183 pounds? I think I was born heavier than that, you know, and it was literally that bad. Now, I'm trying to figure out what the hell happened. I've never had the shot, but I have a picture that was denied by the hospital, okay? My D-dimer levels were 16 and a half times what normal was.
Okay, he had a stroke that's in the books. Now he's telling us that his D-dimer, 16 times normal. What would that suggest to you? If you heard
he's
somebody
say, "He's microclotting." Yeah, he's
everywhere.
Microclotting.
From head to foot. That's right. Remember, dear friends, Dr. Buttar did not take the bioweapon. And he's clotting, microclotting from head to foot. Wow.
Troponin T, which is not used for myocardial infarction, they use troponin I for that, but the troponin T was 342. Normal is 21, I think, or 22. And those are pictures of myocarditis and pericarditis. And here's the real clincher. Throughout this whole time, when I start getting pain, if I leaned forward, I'd have full resolution within 15 seconds of pain, which is a characteristic of pericarditis and myocarditis. It is not of atherosclerosis or anything else. And, you know, they're trying to figure out where the stroke happened. I'm like, my freaking D-dimer levels are, you know, which indicate coagulopathy. These are all findings that are consistent with the vaccination, the COVID vaccination, or they've been attributing to COVID, not to the vaccination, but that's what we find to be attributed to COVID vaccination as well. And it's being ignored by mainstream, just like they ignored the remdesivir and some of these other components that were actually causing, you know, the people to have a problem. So it's not just the vaccine. It's actually for people that are experiencing secondary inoculation from people that have been vaccinated. So as Ty said, vaccination injury is one, but it's that exposure to other people. And from what I understand from my military contacts and from some of the conversations that I've had, is that the goal was to get half the population inoculated, at least half. And then the secondary goal was that population would, through exposure to others, create a secondary inoculation. And I think that's what happened with me, and that's what's happened with a lot of people.
Let me back this up. I want to hear that again. I want everyone to hear it very clearly. It's extremely important.
My D-dimer levels were 16 and a half times what normal was. My troponin T, which is not used for myocardial infarction, they use troponin I for that, but the troponin T was 342. Normal is 21, I think, or 22. And those are pictures of myocarditis and pericarditis. And here's the real clincher. Throughout this whole time, when I start getting pain, if I leaned forward, I'd have full resolution within 15 seconds of pain, which is a characteristic of pericarditis and myocarditis. It is not of atherosclerosis or anything else. And, you know, they're trying to figure out where the stroke happened. I'm like, my freaking D-dimer levels are, you know, which indicate coagulopathy. These are all findings that are consistent with the vaccination, the COVID vaccination, or they've been attributing to COVID, not to the vaccination, but that's what we find to be attributed to COVID vaccination as well.
If you just joined us, we're listening to Dr. Rashid Buttar, the late Dr. Rashid Buttar, explain what happened to him in terms of shedding.
It's being ignored by mainstream, just like they ignored the remdesivir and some of these other components that were actually causing, you know, the people to have a problem. So it's not just the vaccine. It's actually for people that are experiencing secondary inoculation from people that have been vaccinated. So as Ty said, vaccination injury is one, but it's that exposure to other people. And from what I understand from my military contacts and from some of the conversations that I've had, is that the goal was to get half the population inoculated, at least half. And then the secondary goal was that population would, through exposure to others, create a secondary inoculation. And I think that's what happened with me, and that's what's happened with a lot of people. I had a webinar 3 weeks ago, I think it was, and I think Sarah, I told you about that. We were going to talk about the cardiac protocol that I use. Dr. Thomas Levy from Florida, who's a cardiologist, he helped me with that. And I just, in doing this webinar, I happened to mention, a webinar leading up to that big webinar, I just happened to mention, is there anybody on this webinar that's having similar problems? I had like almost 20 people, I think it was 17 people, that raised their hands and came on and said they were having the same type of components. And they all had a history of either cardiac disease, you know, but nothing severe, but it was targeting people with immunocompromised function, in other words, cancer patients or diabetics, people with cardiovascular disease, or people that were obese. And I think that's where the target was. It's not just vaccinated. It's also those of us that have been exposed to secondary inoculation.
Okay. That's the late Dr. Rashid Buttar. Words to the wise. Why have we been on this issue of shedding for so long? You just heard one explanation. It's real. We do feel it's getting to be worse in terms of more people now obviously showing signs of having been vaccinated, even though they haven't, and getting sick, and ultimately some are dying. And I think that this is frankly going to become far more common than it is now. And we don't remember have access to the totality and the truth of what's really going on in this country. So we're trying to fill in between the dots and make the connections. And we're doing okay, but it's not easy. A lot of people have been passively injected, not directly. This is a secondary phase with the bioweapon. They have been inoculated with the bioweapon. They have been jabbed, not jabbed physically, but jabbed through shedding. You've got to think of it that way. You can get injected with the bioweapon simply by being around your vax opposite. Okay? Keep that in mind. Go ahead.
It is looking more and more as like they're using the self-amplifying mRNA.
I agree. Now, when you say self-amplifying, I just want to make sure everybody understands what she's saying is that somehow mRNA and the instructions therein is getting into your body if you're not vaxxed. Self-amplifying, the mRNA is self-amplifying. It's replicating itself in your body. And that replication leads to one thing, the production of spike protein in your body by the trillions. Go ahead.
That's right. So you don't need an entire virus. They have methods to enable the mRNA, just this strand of nucleic acid, to copy itself once it gets into a host. Now, Pfizer did have in their clinical trials a group of people that were given self-amplifying mRNA. They said that when they went to market, or phase three, that they settled on one that was not self-amplifying, but do we believe them?
No.
There's other possibilities, too. There's been some talk that perhaps people who had the virus back in 2021, 2020 maybe, and overcame it, formed antibodies, and then when they get re-exposed to the virus or the spike, those antibodies actually wreak havoc. They're not protective. They're infection enhancing, and they make a second exposure, a third exposure, infinitely worse. We won't know until they start doing some autopsies consistently with these people that are dying suddenly.
And if they do, how do we know we're going to get the actual results?
Yeah, I know.
How do we
know?
I mean, I honestly am to the point now where I don't trust anyone from any official governmental agency or even a large group in the alt news world. I just don't trust them.
Right.
I don't think I'm being paranoid. I think I have reason. In fact, I know I do.
We only need the spike protein to cause disease. We don't need the virus. The spike protein can wreak havoc all by itself. So if you're around somebody that's spewing this stuff, that's enough to make you really, really sick. With or without the mRNA, with or without the virus, the protein all by itself is a toxic protein and potentially lethal depending on how much of it you get and where it ends up.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So where do we go? We're really at a terrible disadvantage because we can't get autopsy results that I would personally trust easily, unless it came from somebody like John O'Looney, perhaps, through some of his friends who would do them. I would trust that. But anything coming from a quasi-official agency, you just don't know what you're going to get.
No, you would have to know somebody personally or in the business that, that would be willing to do it and share the results.
Right, right. Okay, let me see. I'm still trying to organize things here. Nagase. Should we do that next or
yeah,
further down the road?
No, let's do Daniel Nagase.
All right. This is an important one. So let me pull this up and get it cued for everybody here. All right.
I mean, this offers a possible explanation.
Possible.
I mean, this is highly speculative right now because we don't know what exactly happened to Dr. Buttar, but Daniel Nagase offers a reasonable explanation of what could have happened. And he's not, this is an older video. He's not speaking to this particular incident.
Case. No.
Right.
All right. Okay, here we go. This is Dr. Daniel Nagase. Nagase, if you're interested. All right, here we are. He's with Dr. Jane Ruby.
Are the unjabbed getting vaccinated? Essentially vaccinated.
Well, the unjabbed are getting exposed to spike protein.
Okay, that's fair.
And so then the question is, well, what do we know about the spike protein from the cell biology research? And that's where there was one study out of England, I think it came out in 2021, where they took spike proteins and put it onto a bunch of cardiac cells that they harvested from people undergoing heart surgery. So this is actually it was a good study. I actually liked the way they did it. They went to people who are going through heart valve surgery or whatever. And when surgeons do heart surgery, sometimes there's little bits of heart muscle or heart tissue that they cut and they toss in the garbage bin because they don't need it. They're putting an artificial
right
or something.
Right.
So what these researchers did was collected a bunch of discarded heart tissue, right? But they didn't just, it wasn't from the garbage bin. They had it refrigerated. And they collected it from a number of different patients. And then they used that and then they tested two things. One was just spike protein onto the cardiac cells. So these are both cardiac muscle cells and the cardiac support cells that they called pericytes, not parasites. It's P-E-R-I, because
right,
they're surrounding the heart muscle cells. They provide the immune system for the heart cells and the energy and support. So when they put spike proteins on this heart tissue, everything went to chaos. Everything went to hell.
What do you mean? What did they see?
So the pericytes stopped working properly.
Wow.
They stopped sending the correct signals to the heart muscle cells. The heart muscle cells, they weren't contracting and organized well. They were, unhealthy or they were dying. It was just chaos. Cellular chaos.
I see.
Now, if it was a whole coronavirus with the spike protein attached, there didn't seem to be much problem.
Okay, I want to review that. Let's go back over that again. It's very important. Pericytes, okay, and spike protein. Not a good mix at all. So let me back this up and play this portion again. This is how the human heart, when it is infested, surrounded, and under attack by the spike protein, can simply stop operating. The bioelectric signaling through the pericytes is shut down by the spike. You're dead. That's died suddenly. That's falling over dead in public. That's how the heart, that's one way the heart can be shut down through this. Another way, you can go up to your spinal column and go up to your brainstem and look for damage in there. Think about all the tiny micro shedding going on in there that causes damage. So the signal.
Yeah, that spike also accumulates in the brainstem. And the brainstem,
right, the brainstem
regulates the heartbeat.
Yeah. So if it gets in the way and you got micro clotting going on, it can shut down the signal to your heart and you're dead. Just that simple. So let's listen again here with that in mind.
different patients. And then they used that, and then they tested two things. One was just spike protein onto the cardiac cells. So these are both cardiac muscle cells and the cardiac support cells that they called pericytes, not parasites. It's P-E-R-I, because right. they're surrounding the heart muscle cells. They provide the immune system for the heart cells and the energy and support. So when they put spike proteins on this heart tissue, everything went to chaos. Everything went to hell.
What do you mean? What did they see?
So the pericytes stopped working properly. Wow. They stopped sending the correct signals to the heart muscle cells. The heart muscle cells, they weren't contracting in organized ways. They were, you know, unhealthy or they were dying. It was just chaos. Cellular chaos.
I see.
Now, if it was a whole coronavirus with the spike protein attached, there didn't seem to be much problem. Right?
Ah,
so that's
okay.
A normal situation
okay.
is you have a coronavirus, and no matter what the coronavirus has on its surface, whether it's spike protein or no spike protein, cardiac immune cells and cardiac parasites know what to do with the coronavirus, because most of the time they've seen it before.
Ah.
It's kind of like a coronavirus. It just has a different spike protein on top. We know how to neutralize it. We know how to handle that situation. But cardiac cells have never, ever had to deal with lone spike proteins floating around
yeah.
causing chaos.
Wow.
They don't know what to do with it. And what's worse, there was another study that looked at the same situation where they put whole coronaviruses, COVID-19 viruses, with the spike protein, and they showed that it did not affect the DNA repair enzymes. But when they took those same cells mm-hmm. and they put just pure spike protein on it, then all of a sudden the activity, the fidelity with which the DNA repair enzymes do their job, repairing errors mm-hmm. in DNA, all of a sudden that plummeted. So spike proteins inhibit DNA repair.
Oh,
that's what we know from the cell biology experiments.
Now,
okay. All right, is that pretty much got a handle on what we wanted to,
yeah.
Daniel, say? All right.
Yeah.
The idea is these pericytes that are certainly part and parcel of the heart and the heart muscle cells will be interrupted and neutralized by the spike protein. And they're in charge of all kinds of things. Maybe the final delivery stage of the bioelectric signals from the brainstem, which is in itself already compromised. So you understand this is just another of the dozens of different ways that this spike, mRNA, and plasmid, the triad of death, can take you out. And you do not have to be injected to get these things going in your body. That's the big point here. And I know
I would say for the last 6 months now, maybe longer, there have been numerous unvaxxed people who have died suddenly.
Maybe,
and typically they are working or living with vaxxed people and thinking that they're okay, that they're not really having any symptoms like some, these shedding victims. They believe that they're fine, and yet they go to bed and don't wake up the next day.
And they have.
I've heard many, many examples of that in the last 6 months. So,
for all of you out there,
what
who
it's
have
worth.
Been, differing with our view on the issue of shedding, that's fine. You're welcome. But I think the facts now are beginning to show that we were right from the beginning. We never stopped and never backed down and away from the idea that shedding was potentially a catastrophe here, and how they had planned, how they had built in to these injections the mechanism by which they could literally, figuratively, inject the uninjected. And this is what they're doing. And we're seeing the results in the stories.
It's a very clever stealth weapon.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
Because, you know, for a lot of people don't know that they're being exposed until they have something like a blood clot. Now, we've had many examples of that. Work situations where one or two out of seven people are not vaxxed, and one of these people comes down with blood clots in the lungs, blood clots in the legs. There's been many examples of people, unvaxxed people, almost having heart attacks, what appears to be a heart attack, you know,
right.
Tachycardia and tightness in the chest. Not to mention the bleeding disorders that many women are experiencing.
Catastrophic bleeding disorders.
Yeah.
Horrible. All right, let's get to our third part while we still have time here. I've been at this business a long time. I have never liked the idea of advocacy, journalism, people pushing an agenda under the guise of being an honest, objective journalist. That's a lie. There are many who are liars doing that. You heard that former CIA agent indicate that 40 years ago they had over 400 major national journalists who would do what they were told. No problem. Imagine what it is now. Ambush journalism. There's another one, trying to put words in somebody's mouth. We're going to give you an example of that in just a minute, too. Dr. Batar was interviewed by someone on CNN, and I think you're going to be repulsed at what you hear. The person who put this particular video out happens to have a real problem with ivermectin, and it is clear that this person has an agenda to destroy ivermectin, at least in terms of the minds of anyone who is just sort of bumbling along and doesn't understand the facts. The facts about ivermectin is we do not and have never recommended that you take it prophylactically. Save it. When you need it, take it. It has been given to human beings to the extent of over 3 million doses without any major problem. 3 million. Now, these are not horses that are getting, these are people who have gotten ivermectin and they're just fine. In fact, many are ailing very badly in hospital and they get them ivermectin and within a day or two, they're up and around and out of there. That's a fact. This kind of alleged journalism, and these people are not journalists, they're entertainers, is particularly to me highly offensive, professionally repulsive, reprehensible, disingenuous, and dangerous. This is not journalism. And I want you to understand what you're about to hear, I'm going to stop it a few times, is set up to do nothing other than destroy ivermectin, at least the confidence that most people would have in something like that as an option to consider. All right, here we go.
Dr. Batar is dead. He passed away May the 18th, 2023, and the news is starting to break. It's going viral on Twitter at the moment. Well, I guess he could have faked his death or something, but it's reported that he's dead.
Right away. Well, I guess he could have faked his death or something. That is not journalism. That is not journalism. No, he didn't fake his death. What an asinine thing to say.
And I'm conflicted on how to cover this. I think he's made some good statements, but I also think he's made some huge mistakes that he never fixed.
According to this alleged journalist,
he's one of these doctors pushing ivermectin recklessly.
He's one of these doctors pushing ivermectin. Now, that's a term that drug sellers use. They're pushing heroin. Pushing. That's a negative word to use in a journalistic story.
And it really, really frustrates me. And it pisses me off. Looking at...
Oh, there's another high-level expression as a journalist. Huh?
Negative safety signals. How these doctors push it as a miracle cure, practically.
There it is again. Pushing. Pushing. Use the word pushing. Negative connotation.
Without ever saying the side effects, without ever saying the risks, without pointing out this drug has not been tested for carcinogenic effects, which is right there on the fact sheet.
That's essentially not true. Over 3 million doses and no linkage to any oncological processes. So be careful.
And then these people go around lecturing about the truth about cancer and advanced medicine conference, that kind of stuff.
So the name Advanced Medicine Conference apparently offends this particular individual. That's kind of funny in and of itself.
Basic toxicity of a pesticide called ivermectin.
Pesticide. I thought it was an anti-parasite medication. Okay, so now it's a pesticide. Anything to add?
Well, I'm with you. Yeah, it's a anti-parasite.
Yeah. Right.
We'll talk about that in a second, but let's watch this clip first. This is an interesting clip from May the 17th, only 3 days ago. And by the way, he had a conference scheduled for next week, and he had been promoting this conference, and it's got a bunch of ivermectin pushers at the conference.
Ivermectin pushers. Is that objective journalism? Journalism is supposed to be who, what, why, where, when, and how. That's journalism. This is not journalism. This is advocacy journalism, or worse.
And he himself pushes it. For example, here. New JAMA paper shows ivermectin blows the COVID vaccine out of the water. What an embarrassment for the CDC. Want to learn more? Join me on Telegram.
Perfectly fair statement, by the way. He doesn't feel comfortable with, for some reason. Maybe because he has an agenda.
Watch this clip, because he uses the death of a reporter to make the case that the vaccines should be investigated, or he almost just implies that it killed him. So I think it's on the table for me to critique his ivermectin pushing and ask if it had a role in his decline in his own case. So let's watch this.
I doubt Dr. Fauci.
All right, now, this is a CNN journalist, okay? And we're not going to have enough time, I don't think, to do this. But I want you to listen. Maybe we'll revisit this on Wednesday. Let's see what we do here. This guy's name is Doug Griffin, CNN, and he's interviewed many people. He has in front of him now Dr. Rashid Buttar. Let's see how he handles him.
He is a government bureaucrat, and you're comparing him to Hitler, Nazis.
I am.
Who killed 6 million.
And I got to back it up. He's talking about Fauci.
So let's watch this.
What doubt Dr. Fauci is in your mind? He is a government bureaucrat, and you're comparing him to Hitler. Nazis.
I am.
Who killed 6 million Jews.
I think this is good. This number is...
That is a number that has been disputed with greatest vigor by any number of academicians and historians who studied the case. So there it is. You see where his allegiances are. You see what his agenda is already. This is attack journalism.
Dire.
You think Dr. Fauci is involved in some kind of plot to kill millions of people? I just want to make sure I understand.
Again, Drew, I'm a reasonable person. You're asking me what I think, and I said it could be this, but I can tell you that Dr. Fauci is not an innocent bystander. He's very well aware of what he's doing, and the extent of it and his involvement, I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. I think that the COVID vaccine is very effective at what it was designed for, perhaps, but it's not preventing death, certainly not.
It's not preventing death?
No. People don't die from COVID. You've already seen the data. So why are we getting a vaccine that causes more deaths than the problem itself?
6.34 billion doses of this vaccine have been given. If you're right, people be dropping dead all around this hotel.
It's not orchestrated to do that. Each vaccine has been geared up. So you can look at the ingredients of the vaccines themselves. It's all been published. We already see thousands of people dying. This Delta variant is all vaccine injury. I mean, the CDC's own data is showing that now. I don't want to be part of this mass genocide that I see happening. And I think that what's going on right now will be remembered as a worst time in history compared to what World War II happened.
You are raising doubt about a vaccine.
I hope I am, because I hope more people take heed of the warning that is necessary.
You think I'm vaccinated, right? You think I have a time bomb in me and I'm going to die?
Well, I hope not, but I'll be happy to meet you in 3 years and then see how you're doing.
But you think that's possible?
I think that it's probable.
I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this guy, but how I'm stunned that he still has a license. But I mean, this is just incredible, the stuff that this guy is saying.
This guy is disinforming patients he doesn't even know or meet, and that is the problem. People sitting at home on the internet.
That's the interviewer himself talking, Doug Griffin.
Leaving.
Drew Griffin, I beg your pardon. Drew Griffin.
That this guy.
We have some stunningly heartbreaking news to share with you this morning.
Now here's CNN with a report not terribly long after Drew Griffin's interview with Dr. Buttar.
Colleague, our friend, and truly distinguished CNN journalist Drew Griffin passed away in the last 24 hours.
Unexpectedly, Drew Griffin died suddenly, exactly as Dr. Buttar suggested might be the case.
How about that?
It's one of the few examples of karma that kind of makes sense. He was extremely rude to Dr. Buttar in that interview.
Yeah.
And that's a real important, I think, case in point of how these alleged journalists are not journalists at all. They're agenda pushers.
It's obvious.
Sickeningly obvious. Maybe we'll replay this on Wednesday. There's another little part I want you all to hear. You saw how the person narrating the original, this full tape, came out four square against ivermectin. Think he might have been running somebody's idea of a program to frighten people away from it? Just maybe? Couldn't be more obvious to me as a professional.
Yeah, so absolutely.
When you walk into the arena of mainstream media, you are walking into real trouble. You must be prepared to use your discernment, your discrimination, and to process the data you're hearing. And usually it goes by too fast, and then people can't. I get that. But maybe we'll take a listen to this again on Wednesday, if it works out.
Yeah.
But it's very important. It shows how it's done. Okay, anything we should look at here? Over 3 million doses of ivermectin. We are not pushing ivermectin here, to use that disgusting term. We are recommending that it be considered as an obviously important potential treatment if someone is severely ill. We do not recommend prophylactically.
I've personally seen it work miracles in people that were very, very ill, and brought back from the brink of death. You know, we had Nurse Ann say that when ivermectin was introduced into these the hospital where she was working, it was a game changer. And then they took it away.
We know that remdesivir was a game changer too, but not the kind we want.
Right.
That took everybody out. And we find out now that putting people on a ventilator apparently triggered pneumonia. And that took a lot of people out, whether or not they had remdesivir. So this, what we saw here was a mass organized effort, literally, to kill people in this country. Right here, we don't have to look anywhere else. Remdesivir, ventilators, the forced injection of people with this bioweapon. And it is a bioweapon because it is not owned by any health agency. It's owned by the Department of Defense and the Pentagon. It is a weapon. It is referred to in the literature as a countermeasure. That's military parlance. It's a weapon. So there.
Well, and look how many people it's killed and maimed.
I know. It's over the top crazy. All right, we're running late. Thank you, my friend. Talk soon.
Okay.
Be well. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right. We'll run into our commercial and come right back with hour three.